Okay, so what do you do with Kelly? Just regular yoga tomorrow?
I'm not sure. They do have a special type of program.
I think in the morning they were doing Baba Metsia. In the afternoon, they're going to be learning with some of the guys, like for gravels. That's on some of the days. I think they have other things on.
Do you know if they're going to Tzfat this Shabbat? Are they going to come to
Shabbat? They're
there. Okay. Nice to know. Okay. Yeah, so I just want to talk a little bit about something that comes out of this parsha, which is a very important halacha. Everybody knows that there's a mitzvah of 4 cups of wine during Seder. And there are different derivations, but the main makor for the 4 cups of wine is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu that there are 4 languages of redemption. That after Moshe Rabbeinu complains, Lama Hariosa, why did you make things worse? We now have to gather straw. So it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that Hotseisi Eschem, I will take them out of Mitzrayim, Vitzalti Eschem, I will save them, Vigaalti Eschem, I will redeem them, V'lokachti Eschem Liliyam, I will take them unto me for the nation, which is Matan Torah. So it's not that the Torah requires 4 cups of wine. The Torah doesn't require any wine, but Chazal were Mesakeh, Midrabanan, that you have to drink 4 cups of wine at the Seder, because this corresponds to the 4 stages in the redemption of Mitzrayim. Now the question is, of course, what are those 4 stages? As far as you know, there was a single Maisa called Yetzias Mitzrayim. Good, and if you say, well, Matan Torah, so that gives you 2 things. Yetzias Mitzrayim and Matan Torah, that does not give you 4 Lashonas of Geula. So what are the 4 Lashonas of Geula? Now, putting that aside for a moment, the pasuk goes on with a 5th lashon, Vehevesi Eschem El Haaretz. In other words, Vehotseisi, Vitzalti, Vegaalti, Vulakachti, Vehevesi Eschem El Haaretz. So why do we not have a 5th kais, Keneged Vehevesi? So there are 2 different answers that are given. One answer is that although we did come, but since we're now back in Golas, so the ultimate fulfillment of Vehevesi, in which there will never be a Golos again, is only Limosa Mashiach. So since we have not yet been Zeicha, thank you, since we have not yet been Zeicha to the Geula of Limosa Mashiach, we don't drink the 5th cup. Now in fact, that is why the Minhag of Ashkenazim, not Sephardim, the Minhag of Ashkenazim is to have the Kais of Eliyahu. Now why is the Kais of Eliyahu there? So people say, well, Eliyahu comes to every Seder and drinks from the cup. I don't know if you you were told as a child that if you watch the cup carefully, you'll see. And what parents sometimes do is, if the kid is looking for the Afikoman or something, whatever it is, the parent will pour out some of the wine and say, you see, it went down. Now, as far as I know, there is a makor. There is a makor that Eliyahu visits every Seder. There is such a makor. But as far as I know, there is no makor that Eliyahu drinks from the wine. So really, the reason why it's called the cup of Eliyahu is simply because Eliyahu is the one that's going to announce the coming of Mashiach. So this is the cup that we're going to drink when Eliyahu HaNavi comes. Because it's connected to the kais of Mashiach. Now having said that, there are some chassidim that actually have a minhag, they drink a 5th cup. They actually drink a 5th cup, and this has a mukkar in the Gemara itself. Some say, it's a question exactly, but in the Maral's Haggadah, the Maral talks about a 5th cup as it's not an obligation, but it's a proper thing to do. But some say that the Maral didn't write that, somebody forged it in the Maral's name. And the like. But among some chassidim there is a 5th cup, and there's quite a complication in halacha that if you do drink a 5th cup, where would you drink it exactly? I don't know if it's in halacha technicalities, there are like 10 different opinions where you put the 5th cup if you drink it. Now another answer that's given why we don't have a cup keneged vehevesi is that since it is a machlokas in the Gemara, so we're not sure. So we have it and we don't drink it. And based on that interpretation, Eliyahu HaNavi is not the one who brings Mashiach. Rather, he is the one that resolves unanswered questions. Meaning, if we're Mesupik in Halacha, Right, you've heard the abbreviation when the Gemara asks, the Gemara has a Shaila, and the Gemara does not resolve the Shaila. So it says Teku. Now Teku literally means let the matter stand. And that's really the simple Pshat. It's simply an Aramaic word. Let it stand, we don't know what to do. But the Velt likes to say, Teku is an abbreviation, Tishbi, Eliyo Hanavi from Tishbi, Yitaretz will answer, Kushos Ubayos, questions and problems. So Eliyo Hanavi is the one that's given the credit for resolving all of our unanswered questions. So some say the idea of the Kais Chamishi is he's going to tell us. So there are two interpretations. Is it the idea that when Mashiach comes, we will for sure drink the fifth cup? Simply, when Mashiach comes, he will clarify it for us, which means maybe he'll say not to drink the fifth cup, but he'll paskin for us one way or the other. But be it as it may, everyone knows the well-known Medrash that the four cups of wine correspond to the four terms of redemption. Now let me mention two other Midrashim that flesh this out in different ways. According to Medrash 1, the four levels of redemption correspond to the idea that Paro decreed four evil decrees against the Jewish people. So as a result, the singular event of Yetzias Mitzrayim redeemed us from the four decrees of Paro. What are the four decrees of Paro? The first was enslavement. We became slaves. The second, which was aborted very early, was when he told the midwives, Shifra and Pua, which is Yocheved and Miriam, to kill every male baby that is born, every male Jewish baby that is born. And Shifra and Pua made the excuse, well, we can't do that, it's because the women who give birth don't need midwives, like animals. As soon as the baby's born, he kind of runs away, or whatever it would be. So that's Gezeira number two. Gezeira number two was a direction to the midwives to kill the male children because Pyro had a premonition that there would be a redeemer born in the Jewish people, and he thought that he would circumvent that by getting him killed. Gezeira number three was a response to the failure of Gezeira number two, and that is after the midwives did not kill the babies, so Pyro then told the soldiers, go into the homes, and if you see a male child, drown him in the water. And Gezeira number four, which seems to be not so bad compared to the other three, is this very last event that when Moshe first comes to Paro and demands that he free the Jewish people, so Paro says, you guys are lazy, that's why you're agitating, that's why you think about freedom. From now on, you're not going to be given the straw with which you make the bricks. You will have to gather your own straw, and your quota of bricks every day is not going to be diminished. That's Gezeira number four. So according to Medrash number one, therefore, the four Lashonos of Geula correspond to the four evil decrees of Paro. Okay, that's Medrash number one. There is a Medrash number two that goes in a totally opposite direction. And it says, the four cups of wine do not correspond at all to anything that happened in Egypt. It corresponds to the four exiles that happened to say, just as Hashem redeemed us from Mitzrayim, He has and will redeem us from all the other Gullises. Now what are the four Gullias? Meaning, Mitzrayim is not counted as a Gullis because we were not yet as a nation living in Eretz Israel. But the four exiles occur after we've already been in Eretz Israel. So exile number one was the Babylonian exile, where King Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the first Beis HaMikdash and exiled us. Now that lasted only 70 years. And then we were permitted to return to the land of Israel under the permission of the Persian king, Cyrus Koresh, but we're still in Gullus, even though many returned to Eretz Israel, because number one, many, many Jews still remained outside of Israel. And number two, even in Eretz Israel, we were under foreign domination. So the first Gullus is Babylonia. The second Gullus is Persia. That's where the Purim story happened. The third Gullus was Greece, which conquered the Persian Empire. Alexander the Great conquered the Persian Empire. And in the Greek exile is the Hanukkah story. And then the fourth Gullus is when the Romans, now essentially if you remember, between the Greek Gullus and the Roman Gullus, there was a period of around 170 years where the Hashmonaim, who were victorious in the struggle against the Greeks, did establish an independent Jewish state. And that independent Jewish state lasted for around 170 years. But Chazal do not count that as anything. Chazal count that as part of the Greek Gullus. And the reason it's called part of the Greek Gullus, as we discussed with Hanukkah, is because the Hashmonaim actually became Hellenistic in their orientation. It's, again, it's a very, very cruel irony. Because why did the Maccabees revolt against Antiochus? It was not a matter of physical survival. Antiochus actually was a civil libertarian of the time. The Jews could have full civil rights. But they revolted because he was not allowing them to practice the Torah and the mitzvahs. And many, many other Jews were prey to these Hellenist philosophy of glorifying both the intellect and the body, but not submitting to divine. And the Maccabees, and the Hashmonaim was the name of the family, and the Maccabee was the name of the army, waged a military struggle, and the odds were overwhelmingly against them. As the Hanukkah Alanisim says, Hashem delivered the many into the hands of the few, the evil into the hands of the tzaddikim, and they did establish a malchus, but paradoxically, they became the very enemy they overthrew. Meaning in the name, the successors of the original Maccabees became Hellenists who themselves were persecutors of the Chachamim. So as far as the Chachamim are concerned, as far as Chazal are concerned, Malchus Chashmonai is just Golus Yavan. It's no better than Golus Yavan. Maybe it's worse than Golus Yavan, because here the Golus is coming from your fellow Jews. Now, Golus Yavan, eventually, after 170 or so years, the Hasmonean dynasty was conquered by the Roman Empire. And the Roman Empire eventually destroyed the Second Temple in the year 70. And since Rome is considered to be a descendant of Esav, Edom, we are still considered to be in the Gullus of Edom, although Rome is long gone. I mean, the ancient Romans are long gone, but we are still suffering the Gullus of Edom. So the four exiles are Babylonia, Persia, Greece, and Edom. And Gullus Edom, by the way, is obviously much, 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 much longer than any of the other Gulluses. Gullus Babel was 70 years. Our status under Persian domination was around 52 years. Gullus Yavan, including the Hasmonean dynasty, is around 300 years. So it's, right, 70, 52, 300. Gullus Edom is almost 2,000 years.
Are they all continuous, those Gullus? There are no breaks in between.
There are no breaks in between. But again, I do want to point out that what's a little odd is that in the Persian and Greek phases of the Gullus, Jews were actually living in the land of Israel, and they actually had a temple. You see, they had a temple in the Persian-Greek period, and even a lot of the Roman period, until the year 70. I mean, Rome had conquered 100 years before that. So, obviously, the definition of Gullus is an interesting definition, meaning to say, even with the Beis HaMikdash and even in your own land, you're still considered to be in Gullus when you're under the rule of the nations of the world. Now, conversely, see, you may then make the argument, well, wait a second. If we're in Gullus, even if we have a temple, because we don't have sovereignty, then maybe now that we have sovereignty without a temple, we're no longer in Gullus. But that doesn't follow. In other words, essentially you need two conditions, meaning we are not considered to be out of Gullus until we have a Beis HaMikdash and we have sovereignty over Eretz Yisrael.
So, without Malchus Beis David?
Huh?
Without Malchus Beis David?
No, Malchus Beis David too. Yeah, in other words, that's what Mashiach is. Mashiach is Malchus Beis David, right? So consequently, of course, in the Persian and Babylon, and in the Persian and Greek period, even though we had sovereignty, we didn't have Malchus Beis David, right? So we were still considered to be in Gullus. Now, this idea, where do Chazal get this idea of four Gullus? Why are they so into the four? Because the truth of the matter is that in the Tanakh itself, in the visions of Daniel, lived during the beginning of the Babylonian exile. He has constant visions about four animals, four very ferocious animals come up from the sea. And there's a statue whose head is gold and whose arms are silver and whose torso is copper and whose legs are iron. And the Nevuahs don't identify who the nations are, but there's a constant reference to the idea that the Jewish people will undergo four Golios until the coming of Mashiach. And in standard rabbinic identification, it is Babylon, Persia, Greece, and Rome. Now, if you remember the Maoz Tzor song that we sing when we light the Hanukkah candles, you should notice that it starts off with a general verse that Hashem saves us from all of our suffering. And then there's a stanza about Yitzias Mitzrayim. And then the next four stanzas are each about the four Goliaths, right? Bavel, Persia. The third one is the Hanukkah one, Yevanim Nikvatsu Alai, but that's the Hanukkah stanza. And the fourth one is praying that just as Hashem has redeemed us from the other three Goliaths and Mitzrayim, Hashem should redeem us from Golis Eden. Now, since that was still was and is a live Golis, that stanza underwent heavy censorship by the Catholic Church. And that's why if you're singing the last stanza from a different Siddurim, you might have different words. The original version said, "May God destroy the evil empire." And the Catholic censors didn't like that.
How do you say that in Hebrew?
I'm trying to, because I have the two versions running in my head. Once I have to remember what. It says, second, uncover your powerful arm, v'kari v'se Yeshua, asei lo man shemecha, me'uma harasha, meaning to say, it says, me'uma harasha, asei lo man shemecha, do for your name against the evil nation. And some have changed that to a much more innocuous, instead of Uma Harisha'a, Lios Lanu HaYeshua. It's the same rhyming pattern. So instead of saying, destroy the evil nation, it simply says, Asei Laman Shemecha, Lios Lanu HaYeshua. Instead of Me Uma Harisha'a. Okay. And there are different variations of that as well. Now, let me just point out a very interesting thing. So in Chazal, it's universally the case, with one exception I'll mention, that the four exiles are once again Babylon, Persia, Greece, and Rome. And according to the Medrash, the four Lashonis of Geula are Mechuvan Keneged the Dalid Malchias. Mechuvan, they correspond to the four Malchias. Now, the Ibn Ezra, who was, of course, a great, Rav Ibn Ezra was a great biblical commentator, who lived actually before Rashi, in the 1000s, and Ramban quotes him. Again, Ramban quotes Rashi with tremendous respect, and with Ibn Ezra, the Ramban's language is hidden love but open rebuke. The Ramban always argues with the Ibn Ezra. But the Ibn Ezra has a strong tendency to often differ with Chazal, and the Ibn Ezra Shita is, it's not only his Shita, but he's more open about it, is that although we must accept Chazal on all matters of halacha, anything to do with halacha, but in biblical interpretation of historical events, we are free to offer our own interpretations. This is the Ibn Ezra Shita, and he often goes Keneged Chazal. And the Ibn Ezra lived at the height of the Islamic Empire in the early Middle Ages. And the Ibn Ezra wonders, and so many Jews were under a domination of Islam, that why do Chazal count Greece and Rome and they don't count Islam, which is Yishmael? Now, here's the thing. Chazal didn't count it, really for an obvious reason. The Chasima of the Gemara is before the rise of Islam. If you actually date when the Gemara was completed, Muhammad is born a few years after that. So as far as Chazal, the dominant power that was Meshabed the Jewish people was the Roman Empire. And Chazal had emuna shleima that Mashiach would come. B'mheira v'yameinu. So they always saw Rome as the last galus. But the Ibn Ezra says, in light of the fact that we were not Zocha, and the galus prolongs, and we see the tremendous rise of Malchus Yishmael. So the Ibn Ezra says, it's only logical. Fourth galus is the galus of the subjugation of Yishmael. So instead of Esav, which is Edom, it's Yishmael. Now the problem is, though, but you can't deny that there was Greece and there was Rome. So the question becomes, so that gives you five. What are your four? If you're counting Yishmael, what do you do about, how do you get four? So the Ibn Ezra has a very ingenious solution, which is connected to Chazal Lagamri. And he says, we count Greece and Rome as one gullus. So the four gulluses are Babylon, Persia, Greco-Roman, Yishmael. And his argument is, because although Greece and Rome were two different empires, to be sure, but still, Roman culture, to the degree they had culture, was simply ripped off from Greece. I mean, Greece had literature, philosophy, science, and Rome took that over. Rome was a coarser culture. It was not as refined as the Greek culture was. So the Ibn Ezra says, culturally, Rome was simply a continuation of Greece. Yes, Rome comes from Edom, and Yavan comes from Yefes. But culturally, they're considered to be one Malchus, and therefore that allows us to look at Yishmael as the last exile. And therefore the Ibn Ezra, and of course the Ibn Ezra wrote almost 1,000 years, oh no, more than 1,000 years ago, right, the early 11th century, the early 1000s, and he too was batuach, that Mashiach would come when most of the Jews in the world are under Galus Yishmael. Now, the emesis, I did say it was connected to Chazal, because Chazal uniformly identified the fourth galus as the galus of Edom, which is the galus of Rome. However, there is one midrashic source, which the Ibn Ezra doesn't bring, which actually gives some support to the Ibn Ezra. And that is Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, which is a very early midrash. It's one of the earliest midrashim written down by Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkanus, actually says that the last galus before Mashiach is going to be galus Yishmael, and Yishmael is the most dangerous of all the galuses, because the nation of Yishmael is the only nation besides the Jews that has Hashem's name in their national identity. Kael, Aleph Lamed, is Hashem's name. Yisrael, meaning he has triumphed with God. That was the name that Yaakov was given by the angel. When he triumphed over the angel, he has triumphed with God. And Yishmael, God listens to him. And therefore, the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer says, in some negative way, and this is a very hard concept, Yishmael has a certain, right, the Arabs come from Yishmael. Now again, you know, Muhammad came later. You know, we're not talking about Islam, although it happens to be that Islam is the religion of the vast majority of the Arab world. But really, it's the descending from Yishmael that is the source of the galus. That Yishmael has a spiritual power. He comes from Avraham Avinu. In fact, it's been brought down even today. There are different rabbis that point out that with all of the perversity of Yishmael, they have tzinius, so to speak. They have modesty. They pray. In fact, a Muslim is not embarrassed. Sometimes we're caught in an airport. You know, we're looking around. We're embarrassed. Where do I daven? I don't want anyone to see me. You know, a Muslim, you know, throws out his prayer rug. You know, there's no embarrassment at all, etc. In fact, I mean, it's funny because it's funny because they're aggressive, obviously, to the point of violence over their religious beliefs. So when the Pope made a statement, not this Pope, but the predecessor Pope made a statement that too many Muslims are violent, so he was met by violent protesting that he was wrong. Interesting. How could you say we're violent, as they threw rocks and shooting? You know, how dare? Yeah. Okay, that kind of proves the point. Yeah.
Seeing that... the Ibn Ezra does not quote that Midrashic source that says that the fourth Gaulus would be from Ishmael. Could it be that that source was maybe tampered later in time?
Who knows? I mean, that's already, you know what I'm saying? That's it's always dangerous to make those assumptions, because then you start saying, as one of the Mefarshim say, even when a Rishon changes a Girsa because he has a Kasha, anytime you have a difficulty, just change the Girsa. But the question I want to raise is this. If we do have these two views, therefore, if the fourth exile is Edom, Rome, or the fourth exile is Ishmael. Now, how do we apply it to our... What gullus are we in? So the truth of the matter is we're actually in both. We're in both. Because if you think about it this way, just in a physical sense, a majority of Jews in the world are living in what's called Western civilization. Western civilization is the outgrowth of Rome, both in terms of civilization and Christianity, which also comes from Rome. You know, the Pope's official position. The Pope, now again, there's Protestantism which broke away, but the Pope was the leader of Christianity. The Pope's official position for Rome, that's what he is. There's Bishop of Minneapolis and there's Bishop of Rome. I mean, technically, the Pope is just another bishop. And every little shtetl has a bishop. But it became a kubal that Rome was the shayrish for various reasons. It's an interesting issue. Why didn't they make the Bishop of Jerusalem? There was actually a machlokas, lahavdil, in the early church. Whether the head of the Catholic Church should be the Bishop of Rome or the Bishop of Jerusalem. It would have made a lot of logical sense that it should have been the Bishop of Jerusalem. I mean, why Rome? Rome had no holiness in Yashka's life. Okay, so it's an interesting question. Why? But spiritually, it's very clear, because the kayach of Christianity in the world is the kayach of Esav. And Esav is considered to be the ancestor of the Romans, and it's bashert, so to speak, that they're connected to Rome. So, most Jews in the world are under the domination of Western culture and Christian influence. So that's why the fourth gullus is the gullus of Edom. On the other hand, if you think about the fact that Islamic fundamentalism has terrorized the world, then in a sense we are simultaneously under the rule of Ishmael, even if politically we're not. Meaning, a person living in America is actually living in a world that is dominated by Islamic terrorism. So really, it's not a stira at all to say that the fourth gullus is simultaneously Ishmael and Edom, and Chazal and the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer is Elu v'Elu Divrei Elokim Chaim. Yeah.
Just not 100% clear historically, because I think in Spain, like under the Muslims, we were better off than under the Christians. So, meaning which Muslim exiles were we kind of? Was there a lot of anti-Semitism?
Well, the issue is not. But again, you don't have to. I mean, you know, it doesn't have to be who's worse. In other words, gullus simply means who is dominating us. So the Ibn Ezra says. So during the Ibn Ezra's time, most of the Jews in the world were under the domination of Islam. Now, whether that was more benign than Christianity or not, that depends on time and place, but that doesn't change the analysis. The gullus was the gullus of Ishmael. So what I'm saying today is, most Jews politically are gullus Edom. Those are the countries they're in, Christian-dominated countries. But the power of terrorism that Islam is exerting over the world means we're simultaneously to Islam.
But even in the Crusades, they went to free Jerusalem from the Muslims. Yeah, we're always getting stuck in the middle.
Well, we get stuck in the middle. And the truth is, we did better. Certainly, we did better under Muslim. Jerusalem did better under the Muslims than under the Christians. In other words, Jews did fare better. That's very true. In fact, it was in the Middle Ages, the independent kingdom of Jerusalem. Christian kingdoms that were set up. Now, I want to point out one final point, because I have to stop here, and then I'll continue with this tomorrow, the Dalit Kosos, and that is that the simultaneous Golus of Edom and Golus Ishmael is not only a reference to what we are suffering mibachutz, outside of ourselves, but it also refers to an inner spiritual pagam, defect, that we have within our neshamas. That is, within our neshamas, we have the defect that comes from Esav, and the defect that comes from Yishmael. Now, how would we define it? We would define it this way. Esav represents hedonism and an unbridled desire for the material, although it's connected to Christianity, but nevertheless, if you look at the wealth of Vatican, you can see that. And that is, what does Esav say? When Yaakov wants to buy the Bechorah, the birthright, and he offers Esav food, so Esav's mission statement is, Hine anoichi haylech lamus. Behold, I'm going to die. Why do I need the Bechorah? Chazal say, Esav is not simply saying, I'm so hungry, I'm going to drop. Esav is saying, there is no transcendence, there is no Olam Haba. When I die, that's it. All there is the body. All there is pleasure. All there is enjoying the moment. What do I need this Avodas Hashem doing all for? What purpose? So Esav represents unbridled materialism and rejection of God. Yishmael represents religious conviction that is directed towards evil and corrupt ends. In other words, the Muslim, I'm not generalizing about all Muslims, I'm talking about the extremities here. The Muslim believes in God, serves God, is willing to sacrifice. You know, what can I say? It's an awful thing to say. But the suicide bomber was willing to give his life for his cause. A Nazi, for example, was not, Hitler being a notable exception. But the Nazis at the end of World War II, when they saw that the war was coming to an end, being nice to the Jews and releasing the Jews and bargaining, what's the shot if you're a man of principle? The answer was they were cowards. In other words, they killed Jews when they thought they could get away with it. And when they saw they couldn't get away with it, all of a sudden they became, you know, in a very, very fraudulent way, Mr. Nice Guy. But the one thing you have to say about suicide bombers, I mean, I hate saying it this way, is that they had Mesiris Nefesh for the evil, perverted causes that they believed in. They were willing to give up their life. They were willing to live in caves, you know, for 30 years and live on hard bread and water. So if Esav represents the koach of material hedonism and the decadence of secularism, although it's connected to Christianity at the same time, Yishmael represents the utilization of spirituality towards destructive and perverse ends. So if we look at it in terms of our own life, we see that these are the two nisyonos Klal Yisrael faces. On one hand, sometimes we gravitate to decadence, to laziness, to forgetting about ruchnius, to eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we'll die. And sometimes we use our religious kochos to disparage, to delegitimate. Baruch Hashem, we don't have our suicide bombers. Baruch Hashem, we've never gone into that extreme with maybe one or two cases. But still, when we relate to other Jews with sinas chinam, with rock throwing, we are in effect taking not the Esav aspect. The Esav aspect is indifference to religion. That's when I say, I'm okay, you're okay. But when we throw the rocks, when we call people apikorsim, when we call people amalek, that is the midah of Yishmael, in the sense that you're taking the kaichas of ruchnius and you're using them to destroy. So the point I'm making is, number one, the Ibn Ezra and Chazal are Eilu V'Eilu, particularly after Pekidu Rav Eliezer, are Eilu V'Eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim, and therefore we're simultaneously buffeted with the Golos of Esav and the Golos of Yishmael. But number two, this does not only reflect political realities, this also reflects the spiritual nisyonos that we're in which on one hand you have the decadence of secularism, which has permeated a whole Kalis Reich and open Orthodoxy, other types of movements. But at the same time, within how people are very, very religious, we see a crescendo in sinas chinam and in really disparaging. And you know, how many, I mean, we throw around the labels of Amalek and Kofar and Apikoros with like such abandon. There's the old story. Anybody to the right of me is a fanatic, and anybody to the left of me is an Apikoros. It's only where I am, wherever the I is talking, it's only where I am. That's the good Jew. And that already is the Koach of Yishmael, kind of the perversity of Yishmael. Okay? So be this it may, this is the Medrash that says that the four Kosos are connected to the four Golios. Okay, so we'll continue the thought tomorrow.
Okay.
Today's Wednesday.
What is today? Did you give us the shoot tomorrow at the same time?
Is it every day, right?
No,
like watching
Center
though.
No, they'll shoot.
Inherit that.